I'd like to invite Bruce back, Bruce Miller, a member of the opposition, MLA from Edmonton. Bruce, please come back.
Henning Mundel is my name. And remembering that we did meet 29 years ago, 29 and a half, and were involved with the foundation of the World Citizens Center, I followed in your footsteps as its treasurer. I'm going to ask a politically incorrect question. And that is, when you left Lethbridge as assistant pastor at Southminster, I imagined, and that has been again manifested in the title of your study here, which hasn't yet, as you told us, been tabled with your caucus. Well, maybe they won't accept it, but you'll find another home for it, the NDP.
That's a good question. Let me say before I start, when I was acknowledging people in the room, I forgot. I saw Everett when he came in. I shook hands, but Everett Tanis is a candidate for the Liberals in Little Bow. So thanks, Everett. And Bridget tells me that if there's somebody wants this discussion paper, give your name to Bridget, and we'll make sure you get a copy. See, the purpose of this discussion paper really is to get feedback, because I need feedback to develop it further, and it needs to be refined and turned into as pithy statements that I can bring to my caucus and convince them that this is the route we should go. To answer the question, yeah, that's interesting because, of course, my roots are in the NDP, and my affinities with the social gospel movement. The social gospel movement was really strong in Canada at the beginning of the 21st century, and of course, preachers like G.S. Woodsworth and William Irvine, who was a Unitarian minister in Calgary. There are people that I greatly admire, Tommy Douglas, of course. And so in my development, in my own theology, I grew up in Ontario, and I was a part of a Baptist church, and very fundamentalist, so I didn't think much about social issues until I went to the States, and all my education seminary is in Philadelphia, New York, and later in Chicago. You know, when I was in New York, I'm taking too long here, but... And this to answer this question, but when I was in New York, you know, I was really focused on what does the Bible teach and theology. It was very abstract until the day that I heard that a very famous speaker was going to be at Riverside Church. I was studying at Union Seminary, and he was going to be on the same platform with Reinhold Niebuhr, and I should get over there. And so I went over, and it was Martin Luther King Jr. And it was his famous speech, April 4th. 1967, when he came out against the war in Vietnam. Very famous speech. And he spoke for over an hour, and I was blown away. I was a young student, sort of not involved very much socially and politically. And after that, I said, well, you know, if the gospel is not relevant to real needs of our society, the real social movements of our time, then I'm not interested in it. But, of course, it is relevant. And that led me to... get interested in the social gospel movement in Canada. And, of course, the NDP, before that CCF, came out of that social gospel movement. So I was very active politically throughout the country. I was in Halifax, and after coming here to Alberta, I certainly supported Raj Panu, who was the former leader of the NDP, and I lived in his riding for quite a long time. I was the minister who performed the marriage of Kevin Taft to Jeanette Bowman 26 years ago. And, Kevin has been a good friend for a long time. And I recognized over the years, you know, and knowing him socially, that really his values are the same as mine. I think he's to the left of where liberals are mostly in Canada. I mean, we think we're distinctive in Alberta, the Alberta Liberal Party. So it was not difficult for me to respond to his question. Bruce, you'd be a good candidate. Why don't you run? Because strategically, I think that we have a chance of forming the government. And despite all my respect and admiration of NDP philosophy and so on, I think outside of Edmonton, they don't have much of a chance. So that's why I'm a Liberal. And okay, I'm a left-leaning liberal. And maybe I'll have a tug of war with some of the more right-leaning liberals. But, you know, a party that doesn't occupy the center is not going to be successful in election anywhere in Canada. So I think that's where we are. And that's my answer to the question. I haven't changed my value set at all. Okay, right. Okay, yes.
Howard Forsyth, many of you may remember that quite a few times I've spoken, I hope bitterly, about the gap between rich and poor. You're trivializing the whole thing. Even NDP, who has a better record than anybody else, is trivializing. We ought to change the income tax laws so that anybody making close to a billion or in the millions can get a refund of maybe $500,000 if they'll show that their total wealth is less than some figure. We ought to get rid of the billionaires. Any of you remember 1789 in Paris? Come on. Yeah. Wake up. It's the whole game is being trivialized. Yeah. We've got to do something. It's an outrageous blot on the human race, and we've got to get rid of it. And we will get rid of it some way after the model of France if we have to.
Yeah. Okay. It's revolution you're talking about. Okay. I have a section in this paper on tax reform. I really think that that's a serious issue that we have to look at because it certainly is the case that a progressive income tax has been reduced for the percentage for the rich through the years. And, of course, that's mostly a federal issue. But interestingly enough, Alberta is the only province in Canada that has a flat tax. And that's thanks to Stockwell Day and the Klein regime. And I think it's not part of our platform. I've talked to Rick Miller, our finance critic, about it, and certainly we need to have more discussion about this, especially when we become the new government, whether we would continue with a flat tax. It's 10% across the board. So really the old philosophy of, we tax the rich in order to support the programs, the social programs that help the poor, that has gone out the window with a neoconservative government. So I think that we need to return to that. So I hear you, what you're saying. But it's not just tax reform. It has to be a whole variety of programs. But seriously, we have to look at taxes.
Good afternoon, Dr. Miller. Very informed talk, and I wish there were more people like you in this world. Who would create the playing field? You know, who would level the playing field? After having said that, my question is, how informed the general public is about this issue? That's number one. And number two, unless we get the public on board with us, with this right-minded, with this right thinking, how are we going to go about changing this? Thank you very much.
Yeah. No, that's a good question. I think one of the problems is that I think the press, media, maybe the media people have left. they're in captive. They're captive to the ethos in Alberta, and so we don't have attention to some of these issues that I'd like to see. But I think there's a rising awareness amongst nonprofit groups, especially. I have a section in my paper about nonprofit groups, and sometimes it's called the social economy sector of society. Nonprofit groups are more in contact with people who are in need than governments up there, and even departments. In affordable housing, in the case, a good example is affordable housing. I mean, when a nonprofit organization commits themselves to building a nonprofit, an affordable housing project, they're more likely to be there in the long term, helping people. I think that whole sector is becoming much, much more aware of the whole issue of inequality. And I think that will lead to a rising awareness. Maybe you don't see it enough yet, but I think it's coming. I mean, you think of how many people are affected by the low incomes of people in our institutions, like long-term care institutions. I have an institution in my riding that deals with children who are severely handicapped. Have developmental issues, and it's just so sad because the ratio for dealing with these kids has to be about 3-1 or 4-1. Now it's getting up there, 7-1, and they can't handle it because they can't keep staff. The wages are not high enough, and so many of them are moonlighting, working two jobs, and are tired all the time. And it's really sad that we've come to the point where our policies are affecting the most vulnerable children of our province. That's obscene. That shouldn't happen in a province this wealthy. So, and I think people generally have lots of stories about, they have relatives in various institutions, and they're really becoming concerned. I know seniors are a tremendous group in this province for lobbying and making a change in this province. So, I don't know. That's an excellent question. The government's not going to help us be informed about these kinds of issues. From their point of view, it's unlimited economic growth, full speed ahead. And if some people are falling off the train, well, that's too bad, eh? But too many people are benefiting from that, and so continue on.
Hi, I'm Bev Mundell-Atherstone. Thank you very much, Dr. Miller. I have to admit, as an NDP, I was sitting there nodding my head. I guess one of my great concerns that you didn't mention is the lies that are purported by the government, whether it's provincial or federal, and they're purported under the guise of truth. And they say they've got long-range plans, and really there's nothing to them. They are now doing fear-mongering. I think what's going to be trotted out on Monday is going to be fear-mongering about, well, we can't attack the, we can't do anything about the environment because it would ruin the oil sands. So how do you feel that your party could really turn this around and show that the what they were purporting as truth are really lies?
Well, there's lots of evidence. We could dwell on those kind of issues. For example, the mismanagement of royalties by the Department of Energy. I mean, unbelievable. It could be as high as $14 billion over the last 7 years. I mean, it's just we're not getting the money that we should be getting from the royalty regime. So, we could dwell on those kinds of things. I'm sure during the campaign we can refer to those, but we've been really trying hard to position ourselves as a government in waiting, ready to take over. So we've been emphasizing more positive policies that we'd like to put into place. So that's why I'm working on a paper like this. I think we need to give people a reason to hope that there could be a major difference if there's a different government in power. So that's been our approach. My goodness, if some of the things that had happened, like the one example I just gave in other provinces, the government would be out, right? I mean, what did it take to get rid of a government in BC? Just the premier asked some mafia guy to pave his driveway, wasn't it? Or fix his deck. Didn't take much, and they throw a government out. In Alberta, it was 36 years. Before that, social credit for, 35 years? Our leader is going around, and he shouldn't have to do this, but he says, folks, you can have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity now to change the government. We seem to only change the government once every 70 years. Well, that's too bad. We become a one-party state, and so much patronage, so much fear, especially in this area, of dealing with social. There's so many tremendous, excellent social workers in this province. But there's been, a fear factor, inability to really speak out and address the issues. I mean, because the jobs are on the line, so we need to shift. And I don't know whether I'm answering your question completely, but okay.
My name is Doug Miller. Sometimes we can learn by following other countries. For a while here in Alberta, we were following New Zealand. What has New Zealand been doing lately?
Well, I'm glad you answered that question, Doug, because in my paper, section number 3 on page 7, I propose that we should have a Ministry of Social Development. That actually is the case in New Zealand. New Zealand, of course, provided lots of ammunition for Ralph Klein to to cut out all the social programs. You know, they followed the New Zealand example, you know, cut as quickly as possible while before people can catch their breath. And that's what happened in Alberta. That's what they did in New Zealand. But New Zealand has come to the point now where they realize they made a big mistake, because inequality is as much a problem there. I mean, inequality brings about social problems of social cohesion, huge issues around increased crime and so on. So now they are talking about social investment, investment in people. And they even have a ministry now, Ministry of Social Development. Now, I'm really concerned about this in Alberta because, you know, we used to have a Ministry of Social Services, right? And then it was called Human Resources and Employment. Clint Dunford was the minister. And so Human Resources and Employment, okay, Human Resources is still there. Now it's called Employment, Immigration, and Industry. I mean, social services has disappeared completely. And yet the biggest part of the budget of that department is social assistance programs. And but it also deals with labor and deals with occupational health and safety and economic development and all kinds of other things. And that's mainly what the minister, Iris Evans, talks about all the time. Yeah, I've never heard her talk about social assistance. And so, you know, I think we need to separate out. We need a Department of Labor. That's another thing that's not, I mean, really, employment, immigration, industry. But labor needs to have more attention than it has had. So, I mean, I mean, this is a call for the new premier, Kevin Taft, when he takes over to decide what departments we should have. But I think we need a labor department. The labor code is way out of date. 1984, we have one of the worst labor codes in the whole of North America. It's a restrictive code. A lot of things need to be changed, like the issue of first contract legislation or replacement workers and you name it. We need changes. So, but I'd like to see the employment labor separated out and have social development dealt with in itself. You see, but right now it's the workfare approach. So they are always connecting social assistance with work. And so people are stigmatized. If you can't work, you know, you're labeled not able to work. Or able to work, you're a learner, but I think that's the wrong approach. It's undignifying for people to be so. I mean, since when does our identity as human beings depend on our contribution to the economy? You know, we're made in the image of God. We have worth, we have value, in terms of our who we are, and I think we need to start there. So I think a whole new model is in order. So I like the idea of a Ministry of Social Development. So thanks. That's following the New Zealand example. Thanks, Doug.
Thank you, Dr. Miller. Thank you for coming down and speaking to us and not being afraid to. Unfortunately, you're preaching to largely the converted here. Oh, sorry, Michael Cormacan, federal Liberal candidate. But back in 1972, when I came here, there was the Department of Health and Social Development. So we've gone backwards, actually. That was the letterhead that I got my invite here to work on. And, of course, we'd my colleagues and myself would walk outside our door and look at each other and smile each time it was changed. I'm sure we had a half a dozen or more changes over the years. I think what people like you need to do is to preach more and more about it. Bell, the NDs, whoever. We need a big change about in our whole outlook. I think we have all got bought into unwittingly this bottom line mentality, and it's the dollar is the motivator. With the cuts of the 90s that were introduced, and so what, it's back on track, or so they tell us now. Maybe we can be a little more free with it. Hopefully we don't go too free on it, because that can also create problems. And I think that's what the federal government did when the new federal government, when they got in, they got rid of the contingency fund, and now they may be in trouble with all their cuts just to buy votes. So I say go for it more and more.
Yeah.
Push for it.
The question is, why aren't you speaking out more?
Well, I was just going to say that I got another invite last night, and I am. I have an invite coming up with the senior organization.
I don't mean you, I mean me.
I know, but But Bal too, or Mark, or whoever, you know, we need to not be afraid, not feel put down.
The tide
is changing.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think that we've been silenced for a long time. I mean, that's one of the problems, because, you know, really what's been happening over the last 15, 20 years, it's a right-wing revival. You know, and yet I put in those terms because it's religiously motivated. When you look at, especially when you look south of the border, the religious right really is legitimized and supported by the more evangelical conservative Christianity. And that has been a very powerful force. And if you look at historically in the United States, it seems like political agendas always were born out of religious revivals. I mean, the social gospel was that too. I mean, the social gospel movement in the States and in Canada was related to really a religious revival, preachers starting to preach social gospel in their pulpits. So, and, you know, for a long time now we've been silenced. I think we're still in shock that that the right-wing religious revival has been so successful, putting into power conservative prime ministers and Republican presidents. And people vote for that agenda that they bring, even against their own best interest. And so you have books that, for example, a book I really like, it's called What's the Matter with Kansas, which focuses on people in Kansas who suffer economically, lots of unemployment. But they keep voting Republican even against their best interest. And, you know, I worry about Alberta because the possibility of a religious support for right-wing agenda is here too. And in the last election, we did get a little bit into single political issues, you know, like abortion or same-sex marriage. And that takes away from the really important issues, which are mostly economic. The fact that we're not keeping up, you know, people are getting poorer instead of richer, and they should be getting a portion of the Alberta advantage. I don't know whether I'm answering. I'm just rambling on here. But what you also made me think about is that, well, I mean, I think people are realizing that, you know, it's time for a more progressive agenda. That religious revival, that right-wing revival, has gone far enough. I think people in south of the border are saying that. We've had enough, right? And, you know, when I see Barack Obama talking, I think of Martin Luther King Jr. Every time I hear him speak, I think, wow. You know, this is really interesting. And so I think that in the States they're moving more now to a more progressive agenda. Of course, their big issue, which is not our issue, but their big issue is Medicare. And to the fact that there are so many millions of people in the U.S. don't have any kind of Medicare insurance coverage at all, is a huge issue for them. So, you know, they have a different kind of set of issues than we do. But the progressive agenda is coming back. You know, I think it's going to come back to Alberta too, because people, when they're asked, are you satisfied in Alberta? They say no. And, well, let's look at some of the, you know about the Alberta Genuine Progress Indicators. Mark Anielski has developed that, and there's a paragraph here in my paper about it. From 1961 to 1999, the GDP increased by over 400%, or 4% per annum, but the genuine progress indicators have declined. And by genuine progress indicators, Anielski means, well, poverty. Poverty is increasing. Divorce has increased 312%. Suicide increased 30%. Crime rates increased 37%. And all that's costing the society huge amounts of money. So are people happy? Are people satisfied? Do they feel fulfilled? Do they think their quality of life has really increased? I mean, with the high cost of housing and so on. I think that this undecided vote that we see, it's huge in Alberta right now. So political observers are saying this is going to be the most volatile election since 1971 when Lougheed came in, right? That undecided vote is huge because I think, you know, we've awakened and we think, geez, you know, all this revenue is coming from oil and gas. What do we have to show for it? Where are we going? And are we really getting ahead? Anyway, sorry.
I almost forgot what I was going to say.
Well, I forget what question I was responding to.
My name
well,
is...
I'm preaching. Isn't that what you wanted me to do? Okay.
I'm Jean Fennell. I'm known as a very practical person, so my question is really a suggestion. Don't you think that in your campaign that's coming up, you could tell people about the change that the liberals would give us, but we need specifics. What would you change? And in that way, the voters would hear what the conservatives are doing. We talk about how there's secrecy, and we don't know what the government is doing. Well, could you not say, we're going to change such and such and such and such, and therefore you would tell practical voters like me what is wrong and what you would do?
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, I'm rushing back to... I know that's a really good point. And I'm rushing back to Edmonton for... we're having a rally tonight, and Kevin Taff is giving the alternative throne speech before the throne speech actually happens next Monday. But, you know, it's really important that Kevin, wherever he goes, and he's going to be visible throughout the campaign for the 4 weeks. He's going to fly back and forth. He'll be in Lethbridge quite a lot, and it's really important for him to be as concrete as possible to make all the platform issues really personal for people. Now, but for those of us like Bridget and myself who are working in our own riding, I mean, it's the same thing, and we have to have concrete suggestions. So, but it'll be different depending on what the issue is. For example, my riding, one of the biggest I represent an older community in Edmonton. And we're losing our schools. In two years in a row, we've lost two schools that have been closed. And so, you know, what will we do? Well, I think, you know, one of the problems is that the School Act really forces the issue. We have these abstract utilization rates that the province, the Department of Education uses. So if a school doesn't have the numbers, it's in trouble. Without looking at the value of that school to the community. That really it's about the revitalization, the renewal, and the viability of the whole community. It's not just narrowly education, but it's about the health of families in the community. And this, I was just furious. I spoke to the Board of Education, trustees in Edmonton just a couple nights ago. They closed the school in my riding, or they're in the process of closing it. And it's a community of mostly lone parent families, high Aboriginal population, low incomes, and they're going to take away the last thing that they have, their school, where their kids can walk to school. I just think that's terrible. So, you know, if we're in power, I think we have to relook at the School Act. We have to look at the values that we have in regards to education. We need new schools for sure, but we sure need to pay attention to older communities and support these older communities. So, you know, that's something specific and concrete. Is that concrete enough? I don't know. Yeah, Bridget.
Dr. Miller, my name is Trevor Page. In your presentation, you mentioned the need for a social development system or social development model. And I take it from your comment that you don't have one in the Liberal Party, and that your discussion paper is an attempt to get one together.
Right.
And I think you also said this has not yet been discussed in caucus.
Right.
Will it be discussed in caucus? We're on the brink of a campaign.
Well, Kevin...
And will the Liberal Party be outlining a value-based social development policy?
I think so. It's Kevin Taft has read it, and... appreciates it, and we have some specific things in the platform, like, for example, taking the social assistance rates and using the market basket measurement to get the rates up. So there are specific things, but I think we need some. We ourselves, as the Liberal Party, need to work on this more.
There has been a social problem for quite some time
in
Alberta.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I find it a little odd that right on the brink of the campaign that we're just going to start thinking about this.
Well, we're in progress. I mean, we think of just before the last election, there were only four or five Liberals in the House. Now we're 16. There's so many issues. You know, we don't have enough research staff compared, of course, to the Conservatives, and we don't have enough... members in the House to develop as fast as we might like to. So, and partly it's my fault because on this particular issue, because I started this more than a year ago, and started working at it, talking to people in the department, and trying to develop it. And so I'm a little bit behind. We have, for example, on our housing policy and affordable housing policy, we're way ahead. We have it pretty clearly written down, and thanks to Dave Taylor in Calgary. I'm a bit behind, so yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Bill, old colleague here.
Thank you, Dr. Miller. I feel threatened and challenged by your talk in one way, because supposing governments, whether conservative or liberal or NDP, are not going to get beyond the corporatism that has tremendous power, then what we have to do is be the change. You're asking for change, and we have to be the change. So there's a systemic and a personal. And while we're talking about systemic changes that are going to work their way down, what your challenge, it seems to me, is that we have to personally be the change.
Right.
So we have to know people who have no housing.
Right.
We have to know people on age. We have to and that's the challenge, because I can sit here and read all the stuff in the paper and other books. I'm just enjoying Naomi Klein's shock doctrine.
Yeah.
But
No, that's really that's very good, because I think there's been a shift in thinking in the whole social service area that that we've been remiss, because we think that we have the expertise, we have all the answers. So we define communities in terms of problems, and then we go in saying, okay, here's the answer. Now that kind of approach, it maybe supports the welfare industry, but it doesn't necessarily bring about the kind of change that we want. So I think there's a shift towards, okay, what kinds of assets do people and the community have? What kind of resources are already there? And shouldn't we respect those resources, respect those people, and then build up from the grassroots, build up? I know that's there's been a lot of work in this asset building or asset recognition of assets in community building, throughout North America. In fact, if you go online and just put the word search, I think you get to Search Institute, and they have all kinds of suggestions about that. That really represents a shift in thinking, which I think will have, because, you know, people who do have special needs, I mean, the social capital that can really help them is right there in the community. We have become, I guess, so isolated in our modern communities. We got very wealthy, and people are isolated from their own local communities. I know Lois Hall. She's such a wonderful person. She actually stopped short of saying what she really wanted to say when she was lieutenant governor, because she was a good liberal. And she always had trouble reading the throne speech, because she took issue with all kinds of things. And, you know, she used to tell stories she'd take off her glasses, and tell a story. Once in the middle of a throne speech, she took off her glasses, and I could see on the conservative side that, what's she going to say? Anyway, she was really, really concerned about poverty and so on. And she said, Bruce, the trouble with so many of my colleagues, my rich relatives and so on, is that they don't have roots in Alberta anymore. They have homes in Palm Springs. They go elsewhere. They don't have roots. They don't care about the local community anymore. And I think that's a shame. So what we have to do, I think, is shift our thinking, that we have to begin with communities where the people are, and they need to be empowered to take action themselves. I started a group, or I was helpful in starting a group called Poverty in Action, and which lasted for a time, in which poor people got together in order to voice their own opinions. So often, it's middle-class people kind of represent them, when actually they could represent themselves. They could tell their own stories if we give them a chance.
Hi, my name's Carol Sakia, and I hope this is a short question. I'm also a New Democrat all my voting life, but do you believe in uniting the left of center in this province, and can it be done? Should it be done?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, we do have to unite. It's interesting that the right is fracturing a bit with the Wild Rose Alliance. And so that's, in a way, from our point of view, is a good thing. Maybe the conservative vote will be split. In Edmonton, it's always a challenge, always a problem. In the last election, it was quite shameful because I had a very powerful New Democrat candidate in Larry Boy, who was running against me, a former president of the ATA. He people all said that he would have been tremendous in the House, and I agree. He would have been tremendous in the legislature. It was just a shame. We should have got together. You should ask that same question of Brian Mason tomorrow, because I'm not sure at the NDP leadership level that they're open to that. So I would like to see a unified left. But if we're ever going to have real change in this province, the left has to get together. I agree.
Will you join me in thanking Bruce Miller? Please remember our programs tomorrow and a week from today.